price went back up by the 500, I'm going, oh,
okay.
My God.
I guess we can get started.
Somebody should write a law.
You got to delete your
cookies. Mr. Beiler,
they, like, will think it's
you. Would you come forward? I'll open the hearing. Ready? I'll open the Subcommittee on Natural Resources for April 8th, 2015, and open a public hearing on HB 5042. I understand we got through Chapter 4 yesterday, and we're beginning with Chapter 5 today. And first of all, I think you have some responses for questions that the committee had that you'd like to go through.
Thank you, Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield, member of the committee. It's for the record, Tom Beiler, Director of the Water Resources Department, and thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I do have just briefly want to do some follow-up on some of the questions that were raised yesterday on the performance measures, and one was relating to key performance measure number one, which measured the percentage of watersheds where flows are needed for fish that have had in-stream flows protected through programs that we manage. And there were, I wanted to clarify that that is an annual assessment, and it's based on what in-stream flows are protected in any given year. Some of those flow protections may have been implemented in years past. For example, a permanent in-stream transfer. Once that is implemented, that will carry forward in each year and be counted as an in-stream flow protection under this measure into the future. We also have temporary in-stream transfers called leases, and those will be also counted on a year-by-year basis. But when those leases expire, that could cause our percentage to drop down. As a result of those coming off the books. At the same time, anytime we do a new transfer or new in-stream lease or in-stream transfer, that can add to the percentage of watersheds that we're protecting with in-stream leases. So I hope that helps clarify a little bit the response from yesterday. I also wanted to follow up on questions relating to key performance measure number 7, which involved the number of hits that we had on data that we hold on our website for information purposes for our customers and the public at large. And Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Parrish had some questions that quickly made me feel like I was out of my expertise area, but we had some folks that were able to pull together some information that I hope will be helpful, and we can certainly provide additional information if you desire. The bottom line for us is that the number of hits that we had don't include bot or web crawler types of data sets, if that makes if people are following me on that, nor do they include pass-through traffic. These are folks who are actually looking for data that we're tracking. It does include Water Resources Department staff use of that information, which entails about 15% of the $2.39 million hits that occur on those sources. In terms of unique users, we don't have detailed information, but we do have IP information, and there's 40,000 distinct IP addresses, which means there could be many more users associated with those addresses if they represent an organization that has many people. But we don't have the ability today to be able to dig deeper into that, and would be welcome to any conversation around exploring that further in the future. Mm-hmm. In terms of the data sets that we that folks are looking at, we have about 31% of the folks who are going into this data are looking at well log queries. Well logs are records of information associated with wells that are drilled around the state. And as I mentioned yesterday, that's where people are starting to move in terms of trying to get new water because surface water sources are no longer available. And so it makes sense from our standpoint that we are seeing more consultants, attorneys, members of the public look into that data to understand the resource, to better understand the resource and their options as they move forward. We also have a lot of folks who, about 25% of the hits are targeted to what we call our vault, and this is an area where we have numerous scanned documents that include water right documents, older well logs, application permits, certificates, et cetera. And again, these are important information for water users, for consultants, for other agencies to be looking at, federal, state, local, tribal, et cetera. We have a very wide array of folks who are interested in our data and are using it on a regular basis. So I won't belabor that more. I do have more information, and I'd be happy to roll that up into a memo if that would be useful for folks.
Yes.
I just wanted to say thank you for providing that information. It was very insightful. I thought that was very good. The other thing that you guys might do internally is look at, and we do this for our websites, is actually look at Oregon, folks coming from Oregon. On our legal website, we'll have folks from India who literally will go through multiple. I have no idea what the heck they're doing on our webpage, but they do these odd things. Just from kind of internal reference to find out where these Oregon people are then landing, because then you can look at their landing pages and things like that. So
great.
For your own, but thank you very much for providing all that information. It was very insightful.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Okay, thank you very much. So we will move on to Chapter 5 of the presentation. This is where we move into discussion around our budget itself and the recommended packages associated with our budget. With this slide here, this provides a kind of a high-level overview of our budget request on the right-hand column, as well as there are 2013-15 legislatively adopted budget, as well as the 2011-2013 legislatively adopted budget. What I want to emphasize for you today is that we are driven primarily in terms of our staff resources around general fund. We do have fee-based programs as well. But as you can see with the governor's budget, three out of $4 will come from general fund to support our staff resources under that proposed budget. I also want to note for you that what we see with this table is a trajectory of greater interest and investment in bond resources, capital funds, essentially, to help meet some of the supply needs that we've been talking about for the past couple days and the demands and challenges that communities are facing with respect to their water quantity needs. And so the other funds, grants and loans, row there reflects an emphasis in moving in that direction. And again, as context, this is an area that many Western states are engaged in, recognizing that the state is the manager and has sole control over water quantity resources within the state. Many states are investing significantly in the development of water infrastructure and water supply and conservation projects. As you heard from the governor's office yesterday, the state of Washington probably about 8 years ago invested $200 million in a program to help develop water supply. And the state of California has long been engaged in that. They have committed hundreds of millions of dollars over the years and most recently passed a statewide bond package of $7.1 billion for water-related infrastructure. So I'll be talking with you today about a package that comparatively is modest, but certainly significant from the standpoint of the state budget, looking at $50 million of new bonding authority, a combination of lottery bonds and general obligation bonds. And I'll walk you through that in more detail here shortly. We're not an agency that relies heavily on federal funds, as you can see. And lastly, in terms of the table here, from the difference between the 11-13 and 13-15 budget, we've seen a reinvestment in staff resources, which we're very grateful for. That's been critical for us to be able to make progress in terms of data collection and data assessment, which, as I've mentioned, are so important fundamental to help us make good decisions in water management decisions both today and into the future. It's also helped us with our staff and field resources in terms of just providing the level of engagement and customer service and communication that will help the water user community wrestle with their challenges and strive towards their opportunities in ways that we can be as productive as possible. So below the table here, just want to reference this briefly because this is how we've organized our budget requests, and this will play out in, as I walk you through the different option packages. We have three areas that we've emphasized in looking at our budget requests. One is the Integrated Water Resources Development or Development Program. This is the supply program that I've been talking about and is tied to the capital package. We have a number of positions, a team that we want to create to help get this program lifted off successfully, to be able to act as an active and constructive partner with communities who are interested in engaging in the assessment and review and pursuit of water supply development, whether conservation, in-stream needs, or out-of-stream needs. Many communities around the state do not have the capacity themselves to be able to carry out those functions. And we're interested in not only having resources to be able to help incent that those actions, but also to provide some technical expertise through staff resources as well. The other two items here are strengthening our core functions. As you've heard, we, you know, being able to develop data, be able to have a strong field presence, being able to make timely review decisions on the different water transactions that we are responsible for are extremely important to us. They're important to the folks that we work with in the around the state, and further investment in those areas are critical for us to be able to move forward. In addition, being able to have the resources to be able to help communities who are challenged with water issues, and I'll talk a bit about that as part of this presentation as well. So I want to, with this slide, you're going to see a series of slides here, and they're all going to have this this area down at the bottom that shows kind of the architecture of our water supply program, the Water Integrated Water Resources Program. This is the capital funding that we feel is important to help communities address their water supply needs both today and into the future. And it's based on there are three legs to that stool, essentially. There's a planning element. We need to help folks bring people together within the communities or basins or sub-basins that they live in to work with the department and others to develop a game plan, and that in part it entails understanding the resource itself, understanding their needs into the future, and looking for solutions that can help meet those needs. So that planning function is extremely important for us, especially here at the outset where we are really looking to help build this program and develop more ideas within communities around the state. The second leg of the stool involves a program that we've had for a number of years now that allows some evaluation of the feasibility of projects, both financial and economic, and in terms of the technical aspects of a potential project. And then finally, what I think excites most folks is the idea of getting projects on the ground, and that's the third leg of the stool there on the right-hand side. Underlying that in the yellow bar is the technical assistance, and this is the team that I was referring to. And with this slide, I want to step you through that in a little more detail. This refers to package number 115, which involves a number of elements. It involves, first of all, funding from the capital funds. These would be lottery bond funds, $750,000 that would be dedicated this coming biennium to for grants for planning purposes, for water supply planning purposes. This is something that is attached to a Senate bill that we have introduced this session, Senate Bill 266, which would authorize us to be able to do that grant making, to have that grant making authority. It's based on an emphasis of collaborative, cooperative, voluntary efforts that are inclusive, that bring people to the table and allow for folks to build ideas to meet their future needs in a way that we think will enhance their success in the long run. So with those funding, let me walk you through the positions. And these positions, there are six FTE that we're requesting in our budget, and a couple of them are directly involved with the planning that I was just mentioning, those planning funds. There are two positions that are place-based planning focus. And what we're envisioning with those positions is that they would be out in the field working with communities who would receive funding under this program, who would be engaged in pulling members of their communities together, as well as other interested folks, to discuss the status of the resource, again, looking at their trying to quantify and get a sense of their future needs, and then to identify potential projects that can help them satisfy those needs. It's our sense that as we build this program, that the department will need to have a very active presence at the table with those communities in order for them to be successful. As I hope you've gained some appreciation for the complexity of water law during the time that I've been here this week. I can certainly guarantee you that it is as complex as anyone would tell you. And there are a number of communities out there who will not have the in-house capacity in different parts of the state to be able to successfully navigate through the policies, the laws, as well as just the project development aspects or water supply analysis that will be needed. So we see a combination of these two staff persons working actively and engaged with the communities around the state who are engaged in these processes, also complemented with the $750,000, which would, and I apologize, I didn't mention this at the outset, that $750,000 in grants would go towards helping to convene these groups. It would help to provide funding for facilitators if they were needed to help move those efforts forward. And also, those funds could be used to help do technical assessments, to hire consultants to do an assessment of the sources of water in the areas of interest, to do some technical work around forecasting demand, to do technical work around looking at project ideas. So there's a wide array of uses that we would envision for the $750,000 in addition to the staff efforts to help keep those processes moving forward. So we have four additional positions that I want to step you through that are part of this broader technical assistance team that will be involved in really all aspects of the three elements of our plan. One is a water supply project manager. We really envision this position being the person who would be ensure that state investments are made well, and that the grant recipients or loan recipients are carrying out their responsibilities associated with any of those investments that we would make under this program. They would also be a source for communities to help provide guidance basically from the conception of an idea to the completion. And we're really envisioning this program, again, that the state is a partner here. We want to be helpful. We want communities to have to be successful in meeting their water needs into the future. And this position in particular will have expertise in terms of project management and a good sense of an understanding of the different aspects and complexity associated with moving a project, again, from conception to completion. We are also seeking an engineering position associated with this, and really the idea here, again, similar to the position I was just talking about, that there are communities around the state, rural communities in particular, where they may not have the resources to be able to engage in the kind of feasibility studies, engineering design and analysis, hydrologic analyses, and other evaluations relating to the construction of potential water infrastructure. And this position is offered up as an opportunity for the state to provide those services and advice and guidance to communities who are interested in doing this kind of work. Similarly, we have requested a finance analyst position, and this position is we see the need for this position because we think that the funding terrain, if you will, has shifted dramatically from the past practices in terms of supporting water supply infrastructure and large projects of this nature. And if you look back in time, many of the public works and the water infrastructure that we see around us today was funded primarily by the federal government. And there are clear signals from the federal government that is not an option in the future to the extent that it has been in the past. And so for folks who are interested in developing water supply infrastructure and doing large-scale conservation works, we need to be creative in how we finance these types of projects. And increasingly, we need to be looking at public-private partnerships. And with this position, we would have some in-house counsel and guidance, someone on staff who could help communities who are interested in engaging in these types of projects develop strategies and plans associated with financing these efforts and providing a critical service for them in that regard. And lastly, I'll mention a water supply permitting and technical assistance coordinator. This position we envision would provide some similar functions to the water supply project manager, but maybe slightly lower elevation, more into the weeds in terms of helping with more specific technical needs, whether it be navigating through the permitting minefield or providing technical advice relating to the specifics of any project that they may come their way. So I'll just pause briefly and see if there are any questions on this. This is a big piece of our water supply program. These positions we think are important for us to be successful in lifting this program off and providing services, especially to those communities that don't have the in-house personnel to be able to carry out some of these technical functions. All right. With that, I'll move on to package 106. This package involves the feasibility element of our program and is seeking a 0.75 FTE, which would be general fund supported. And by the way, I apologize. The six positions in the previous slide were all general fund proposed for general fund support. I didn't mention that earlier. In this case, we currently have a 0.25 FTE to help us manage the grants associated with this feasibility grant program, and we would like to seek a full FTE. So the request here would be a 0.75 FTE, which would allow us to have a full position associated with administering grants under this program. What we're seeking here also is $2 million, again, tied to this capital bonding package. These are $2 million of lottery bonds that would be available for applicants moving into the 15-17 biennium for feasibility studies associated with project ideas that they're moving forward. This is a program that we have experience with, and it's had some active use over the years, and we think that is just going to grow over time. Next package, 113. This requests funding. You'll see here $17.25 million of lottery bonds. Again, this is attached to the broader $50 million bonding package. Again, here we have $17.25 of lottery bonds associated with funding water supply projects. This is that third leg of the stool here, that, as you can see in the slide. We're also seeking a full FTE funded with general fund to help support the administration of the grants and loans under this program. One of the primary vehicles for distributing funds under this, with this funding, would be Senate Bill 839, which was passed in 2013, which allows grants and loans through that program. So I will keep moving here. Package one.
Senator.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yes, Representative Plowman.
So when we did 839, did it not have a fiscal or come with anybody to do it?
Mr. Co-Chairs, Representative Clem, yes, we do have one position. I think was approved in the 2013 session, an NRS-5 position, which we have on the books now. But we didn't have the same, certainly didn't have the same ask that we have this time with the funding. We also have the that 0.25 position I mentioned earlier that has been oriented around the feasibility grants. So we do have some existing FTE in our current budget that would be additive to, or that these new positions would be additive to.
So what's the, tell me more about the difference between these people that would be, I guess, on loan or advising local government and then overseeing the grants that are made to the very, to the same local governments, and why isn't that just the same person?
Co-chairs, Representative Clem, the way we're looking at the building the program is that we'd have two positions, and this was the 0.75 position, and then this position here within this option package that would really be working on the front end of helping with the solicitation for grants or loans. They would be executing the program in terms of the review, and they would be kind of the nuts and bolts folks in terms of managing that the program from that standpoint, a very administrative standpoint. The other staff would be looking at more on the ground partnership element. This is something I experienced at OWEB quite a lot, and there is a bit of a blurring of the lines here. But the way that we look at this program is that we're really all on the same team. We want these folks to be successful with these dollars. Now we need to have appropriate checks and balances, which I think is maybe where you may be where you may be thinking, and those you certainly need to build into the program so that we make sure that the dollars are being spent well. But we also, I think, can be more successful if we approach it from a partnership standpoint. So the six FTE that I was talking about are really more guidance, technical assistance, folks out who are working out in the field with folks to help them understand how they can be successful and giving them advice in that regard. The other two positions are Salem staff who are cranking out the grant agreements, working on the solicitations of grants. I don't know if that gives you a little more context.
Yeah, so, okay.
Then please proceed.
So I'm going to step you into the last element here, which is a request. This is the, I mentioned previously, $50 million lot or bond package. $20 million of that is lottery bonds. And I've stepped you through the different components of the lottery bond piece in the previous option package slides. I will have a roll-up slide here right after this that I think will give you a little more context about the whole program that we're proposing here. But the other bonding element is $30 million of general obligation bonds that would be housed in the water development loan program. This is a program that's been on the books for us for a number of years now. It has not been active in recent years, and this funding would allow us to recapitalize that program and make it available, in this case, to smaller communities around the state who may be interested in developing water supply under that program. And so this is our attempt to give you a sense of rolling up what I've just walked you through. Again, the architecture here is we're looking at a program that would have planning dollars and planning support. It would have feasibility dollars and staff to help support the grants associated with that program. and then project dollars. And ultimately, we want to build a program that will start to generate ideas and viable projects that we can support to help communities start acting on their water supply future. So I'll just pause there and see if there are any questions about this.
One question that I have is on the loan program, which is, I believe, that's an ongoing program, correct? You're replenishing an existing program.
Mr. Kocher, that's correct.
What's the status of that program now? I mean, prior to this infusion of dollars.
Co-Chair Devlin, the program, the genesis of the program was, I believe, in the late 80s and did not get off to a good start. The dollars at that, these are dollars that are loaned out and then they're paid back by the loan recipient. And at that time, there were a number of defaults on the loans as this program was lifting off that the legislature had to pay back with general fund. Not a good scenario for anybody, as you can imagine. The program has not been active since that time. I'm just going to make sure that I'm being accurate here. So the program has been dormant for a number of years after that initial misstep, quite frankly. We've analyzed what happened with that program and would certainly take steps. I think there's a lot that we've learned since that time, and we would certainly take steps to make sure that we didn't repeat the types of practices that led to the problems in those early years.
What are you then planning to do in terms of, well, for instance, if I referred to it as like your underwriting of those loans, what are you doing for the due diligence on those loans to ensure that? I'll give you an example. We have another program, not in your department, small energy loan program that for decades existed without a single problem until a few years ago that they started to make loans that were more speculative on the clean energy side. And some of those have defaulted. And while we're not putting general fund dollars in there yet, it still is forecast that by maybe 1921 we will have to put some dollars in there. So what are you doing to try to prevent, if you go back to this type of program, from having the same, you wouldn't have those kind of issues, because I think that the department there was, I have to be careful how I say this, they were encouraged to make loans that were more speculative. But what are you, I mean, there's going to be a lot of desire once these dollars become available. What are you going to do to sort of safeguard the public's interest in seeing that they're repaid?
Thank you, Mr. Kocher. That's a great question. If I could ask Tracy Loudon to come up, he's our, has more expertise in this arena than I do. He did pass me a note that said that in 2009, I believe, House Bill 3369, added some additional safeguards, but I'm unable to explain those in any detail to you, so perhaps Tracy can help.
Okay. Thank you. For the record, my name is Tracy Loudon. I'm the Administrator for Administrative Services at the Water Resources Department. Co-Chair, the safeguards primarily that were put into place by 3369 was when there was a preference for entities to give loans to that have ad valorem taxing authority, which is a little bit more of a safeguard because the entities that would be loaned would be, instead of individuals, there would be a public entity that would be responsible for repaying the loan. In addition, they also put into place a requirement that we work with both the Department of Administrative Services and the Treasurer to develop criteria for borrowers that were a little bit stiffer that would prove up that they did have the credit rating and the assets necessary to pay for the loan. Repay the loan. And I think, frankly, as you've described the program at Energy, this program also had some similar loaning parameters around it. There was an encouragement to loan money, and those have been removed at this point.
Second question, on the $17.25 million for water supply development, particularly the grants portion of this, From what I've seen of your documents, these are planned to be expenditures, probably most of which would occur over the next 2 years. And if the legislature authorizes that expenditure, which I think there's pretty good support actually for that, but what happens the biennium after if there's nothing additional in that in terms of your needs for the additional staff? I mean, I think there's good support for some of the projects that are envisioned now, but I'm just not so sure that the funding would be continued every biennium. So you might go a couple bienniums again before other projects come forward.
Well, Mr. Co-Chair, it's a great question. You know, our hope is that there would be continued long-term support for these types of efforts. We think there's a great demand out there. We want to work with communities to help them move forward on their ideas to help deal with their water supply future. So I think the demand is not going to go away, but I certainly understand and appreciate the tough decisions that the legislature has to make in terms of prioritizing funding. From a standpoint of this program, the best that we can do is that if we're given resources to move this program forward, we will do so with an expectation to build it for the long term. There are things that that one can do to if what I'm hearing in your question is if we receive these capital funds and staff positions, but the capital funds dry up in a few years, there are ways you can frame our budget that would provide some more flexibility for you looking so that you would be able to make decisions on whether to continue the FTE moving forward as limited duration positions rather than permanent positions.
Mm-hmm. Go back through your slot. I think 17.25 is envisioned as lottery.
It is, yes,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
And I know you're well aware that how limited lottery funds will be, particularly after this biennium. The $30 million is GO bonds. Do you know there must be we have so many different letters for bonds. We have an unbelievable, we're on Q bonds now. I'm trying to think about in the Constitution, we have many sort of provisions for bonding that we haven't used in decades. I mean, we have provisions for rural electrification. Is this under some one of those classifications, or is it a different type of GO bond? Not rural electrification.
Mr. Co-Chair, 11I.
Oh, okay. So these are going to be actually revenue bonds. Then this is what I'm being told.
Yeah.
Revenue bonds, Mr. Chair, the recipients of the loans are responsible for paying it back.
Okay. Well, ultimately, we're responsible for paying back the bonds. They are responsible for paying us back, right?
Co-Chair yes. Devlin, I did want to point out on the lottery bonds that the way we've structured them right now, and of course there can be a different decision, but they're going to go out in two pieces in the next biennium, one in May of 16 and one in March of 17. And of course, if the bonds are being sold that late in the biennium, there's some issue with getting money out the door also,
right.
So they could, you know, the funding could be there in the 17-19 biennium.
The reason I asked some of the questions about the lottery bonds is the most recent debt policy advisory committee recommended reducing the capacity forecast over the next 10 years, and particularly over the 8 years after the coming biennium, down literally by almost a third. So we're down, after this biennium, we'll be down to about 161, 163 million in lottery bonds. And that has to pay for everything from things like Connect Oregon to all economic development activities to activities like this to housing. Just a whole long list of things. So I just think it's going to get tighter and tighter on the lottery bond side, and the future doesn't really look that great on the lottery side. So anyway. Oh, you need to give your name for the record.
Oh. Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield, Kathy Conley from Chief Financial Office.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. This hearing room seems almost like a nice living room. So, okay. Additional questions, Dembro.
Clement had his hand up.
Representative Clement.
Mine's going off on a little bit new direction, though, so maybe.
Okay. Are you in the same direction, or?
Well, it's more about the projects that we're talking about, Tom. I know that there's interest in using this resource. Or part of this resource for storage and mitigation projects in the Umatilla, which I support. I think it's needed and timely. But the process and the timeline for that, I wonder if you could just say something about that, because that project would be. There's not legislation for that project. It's going to be done through this process and decisions about which loans to put into the mix. And I know it's going to be complicated because there are going to be private interests and local government interests, and a package has to be put together. So I wonder if you could say something about what's envisioned as far as that process and the timeline.
Co-chairs, Senator Dembro, thank you for that question. With the Umatilla project, there are ongoing discussions among many different players in that area, looking at an idea that if they're successful in putting it all together, I think would be ready for funding in this next biennium. The timing is difficult to predict, to be honest with you. I do think that some very foundational breakthroughs were made in recent weeks that are putting us on a point of being able to start to contemplate and have conversations around more technical permitting related details. Those invariably take time. This is a big project. There's a lot of moving parts to it, but the key elements are in place, I believe. And as you mentioned, this is not specifically called out in our budget request, but our budget request was put together with this in mind, that this could be a possible project that could be supported with these resources. I'm reluctant to put a specific time frame on it because I just think that there are a lot of things that could happen. But I would say that I have a great deal of confidence that if we're able to move forward as expeditiously as we are attempting to, that we will be able to begin funding this project during the biennium, in the coming biennium.
Representative Quinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you're welcome to direct me to stop talking about this and have a hearing in my committee if I want to, because this is kind of policy related. But
Ways and Means doesn't do policy.
Yeah. So the feasibility studies, and then hopefully after they're done, they turn into more water storage projects. One of the issues that is, there's a bill in my committee, but I don't know that we're going to do anything with it this time or not, has to do with the ability for irrigation districts to do water storage projects. And in particular, there's a court ruling from, let me see, I think this year, in January, where the court held that while it might seem strange, irrigation districts have the authority to condemn land for storage projects. And I think the quote she used was, they could, somebody from Medford could claim land on Mount Hood, technically, under the law. and that this is something, quote, for the legislature to fix, not a trial court judge. I see many problems with this. And I'm wondering, given at least in one of the project that was meant that this case was about, I know the legislature appropriated at least $500,000 to feasibility studies once, and there might have been other grants to do it. The underlying policy of irrigation districts being able to go far and wide to use eminent domain authority to create these things seems like that could become an issue as we go forward. They seem pretty hostile to the idea of changing it, I noticed from the lobbying, but I'm wondering if you have views about the conflicts that may arise from these kinds of efforts to develop more storage, because storage can only be in so many places, probably.
Yeah. Co-chairs, Representative Clem, thank you for that question. I think that's an excellent question, and I'm not going to touch the issue of eminent domain and the ability of local governments to have that. Not my area. But what it does represent, and I think you articulated well, is that these water challenges can go in a lot of different ways. And looking back on, or if you look at that arc that we have with this program and the slide, that planning element is something that I hold, I think is very important. Because what we're trying to do is to invest in communities to come together around developing solutions, rather than having just disparate members of the community try to run with their own ideas. Which can create a lot of discord and conflict within communities. Water is critical. Water means a lot to everybody for a lot of different reasons. I am, and based on my experience at OWEB, I see the power of collaboration and bringing people together. I think that will not only end up in better projects for communities, but I think you're going to be more successful because you're not only developing good ideas collectively, you're building some social and political capital within the communities that would be receiving that water or developing that water that can be the key to your success. If you use other tactics and some it can be very divisive, and you can find yourself quickly in court spending a lot of money in ways that you maybe didn't intend to when you started down the path of developing your project idea. It takes a lot of time, takes a lot of effort to engage at that level. I know the folks in the Umatilla Basin, through the CRUST process, for example, spent a lot of time gathering at the table the various interests, talking about the basin and the needs. Those aren't necessarily fun meetings, but they can create a foundation and a level of trust that you can build on, and I think that many communities will be more successful in the long run. So I appreciate your question because I think it to me, it underscores the importance of that planning element within our budget request.
Additional questions? Seeing none, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So I want to move on to Package 101. This, we're moving away from the water supply, integrated water resources development program, and into a number of requests that we have in our budget that are oriented towards supporting communities and core functions that we carry out in our agency programs. And here with Package 101, we're requesting two FTE with general fund dollars. And the emphasis here is on the Klamath Basin. As you, I'm sure, probably know, there has been a lot of activity over the years in the Klamath Basin, an area that I guess, reaching back to Representative Clem's comment, may not be the greatest example of harmony in terms of water issues, but a lot of progress has been made in recent years. And while not everyone is singing in harmony and holding hands, I can say that there has been a lot more synchronicity in terms of envisioning the water future and dealing with the water management issues in the Klamath Basin. In recent years than there was in the past, and that's major progress for an area that's really had some significant challenges over the years. And those are really embodied in a couple of agreements that were reached within the last 4 or 5 years that help set the stage for a new water management regime that can meet the balance of needs between the tribes in that area, the ranchers, the irrigator community, municipalities, and the broader public at large. While it may not be perfect, it is a significant effort that has, I believe, made a lot of progress. Over the years, as those agreements were negotiated and are now being implemented, we have spent a lot of time as an agency. We have a water master and some associated local staff there who have, as a result of the adjudication reaching a conclusion in terms of the administrative stage, we now, for the first time in the recent years, are regulating water uses in that basin, believe it or not. And as you can imagine, that first regulatory season was quite a doozy for our field staff in terms of introducing the idea of regulation to a bunch of water users who had not experienced that before. And I'm very proud of the efforts that our staff and the success that our staff had in engaging the water user community successfully in that regard. Efforts continue. We send staff down from Salem to meet with the key players in the Klamath on a weekly basis, sometimes several days a week. And I'm finally getting to the punchline here in terms of our request, because we're seeking a position here that would alleviate some of the staff time that we've been having here in Salem by adding a coordinator position that would be able to work full-time on Klamath issues, working with the key folks there, coordinating with the other state agencies, coordinating with the federal agencies, as well as all the local interests on implementation of the water management-related issues in the Klamath Basin. This would be a significant pressure relief valve for us in terms of the staff time, high-level staff time, deputy director, administrator-level time that we've been spending in recent years shuttling back and forth between Salem and the Klamath. It would also allow us to be much more real-time and agile in terms of working with the Klamath community by being able to add this Klamath coordinator position. In addition, we're looking at a position, a water rights specialist position. And in part, we're looking to have this position help specifically with the Klamath Basin, where our expectation is, as we implement these agreements under these new water management system, that there'll be a significant surge of transfers and in-stream leases associated with redistributing water in the basin in accordance with the terms of the management with the new management agreements. And this staff person, in part, would be used to help process those transactions in that basin. We also would like to use that position to help give us a little more muscle on some of the issues that we talked about yesterday with respect to the backlogs that we have and that we're grappling with around certificates in particular, helping us process our claims of beneficial use and be able to make some progress in that arena. So we see that position covering a couple of important bases for us. Package 104 requests one FTE with general fund dollars, and this position is also would be dedicated to the Klamath Basin, and it's also associated with implementation of a very complex water management regime that is embodied in the work that folks have done there locally through the agreements that they've come to. And one of the things that will be very important for the distribution of water under these agreements is for us to have very good data associated with both surface water and groundwater data will only give us a better basis for making good decisions in terms of how we regulate and distribute water under this new system. This position would help us both collect and use that data effectively in that regard. So package 105 seeks funding, again out of general fund, for a position that would augment and really allow the Water Resources Department to be a full participant in regional solutions community efforts. There are a number of regional solutions teams that are located throughout the state. And the Water Resources Department is not a formal participant in those. We do have field staff who will sit in on meetings associated with specific projects on an as-needed basis. But what we're finding is that that these regional solutions efforts that we would benefit, given the importance of water to help supply resources for the ag sector, for municipalities, become essentially the lifeblood of communities. And as we find these resources becoming harder to obtain, and other pressures affecting the growth of demand, having a steadier presence with these regional solutions efforts is essentially the goal of this requested position. Our vision for this position is that this position would act as essentially a circuit rider, and that it would participate in all the different regional solutions teams moving throughout the state, would augment any field presence that we would have on specific regional solutions efforts, and be engaged in any regional solutions effort that that had a direct connection to our programs. So I'll leave that at that. And package 110. This position that we're requesting here, one position, general funded again, and it would add a monitoring coordinator to our staff to help us with coordinating interagency efforts around measurement, filling data gaps, helping move the data that we collect into useful form, processing, being able to add to the efforts that we have engaged in terms of not only collecting the data, but making it analyzing it so that it could be useful, and then making it accessible for folks. We don't have a position currently that kind of looks at the big picture with respect to all the data that we have, and this position would be very helpful for us and be able to serve that coordination function both internally and externally as we work with different partners, some of whom are data collectors and assess data themselves, or the customers around the state, the public at large, who need this data to help inform decisions both near-term and long-term. And this position would give us a lot stronger capacity in that regard and help us to continue our efforts around data management and data collection. So with that, that concludes comments on our or my presentation on our option packages. I don't have prepared remarks on the vacancies and reductions chapter, but I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have with respect to that chapter. Otherwise, I've concluded my remarks for the day.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, we'll turn it over to Kathy Connolly.
Should we switch?
Absolutely. All right.
Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, I'm Kathy Connolly from Chief Financial Office. And thank you. With the Water Resources Department, I am going to focus two things, trying to describe the bonding for this agency and kind of trying to pull apart that bonding from the operations of the department as a whole. The governor's budget for the Water Resources Department aligns with the 10-year plan for a healthy environment. As described to you, it continues our investments in an integrated water resource strategy with positions and funding for grants and loans. The projects, as discussed here, there are some projects that are rising to the top, but the intent over the long term is that this type of funding, this planning, would benefit communities across the state. This is the expenditure history for the Water Resources Department, and I want to distinguish it from the table that Director Beiler showed you, because what I'm showing you in 2011-13 is the actual expenditures of the department as opposed to the LAB, the legislatively approved budget or adopted budget for the agency. So it looks like there's this huge step up as we go through this brief six-year period. But what's important to remember is that it the limitation for the bonding, the Water Supply Development Loan Fund, the legislature says to the department, you are authorized to issue the bonds, and we are going to give you limitation in your budget to distribute the bonds. But the department does not issue the bonds unless they have a borrower first. So if there's no borrower, then the limitation is phased out. They never use it, and it's phased out of their budget. So that's their GO bonds. And that's why in 2011-13, they never issued those GO bonds. And so their actuals are really quite small, particularly in the area of other funds, because that's where those GO bonds are. In 13-15, they were again given authority to issue GO bonds, and in addition, they were given lottery fund bonds. The lottery fund bonds were issued. The GO bonds, again, they're showing up there. They're about $10 million, but they will be phased out because, again, they never issued them. So then we come to 15-17. There you're again seeing GO bonds, larger amount of GO bonds, $30 million. So when we look at the other funds, the yellow part, that's $72.9 million. That's about $30 million in GO bonds. It's $20 million in lottery fund bond proceeds. Also, cost of issuance is going to be there, and debt service for those two. And then it also is showing some roll forward of the 13-15 lottery bonds, because we plan to issue the 13-15 lottery bonds quite late this biennium. So it was hard to get the money out the door. So we phased out an estimated amount of money that we thought the department would get out the door this biennium, and the rest has just rolled forward into 15-17. And that's about $9 million. So my point is that about $60 million of that $72.9 million is really bond proceeds of some sort or another, or debt service. So, and when we look at the operations of the department, it's really down in the general fund area, because as Director Beiler said, that's really where most of their funding for their day-to-day operations, for their staff, for their supplies and services, is really down in the general fund area. And there has been an increase, an investment in this department over the last 6 years. There was an investment by the legislature last year. They are again asking for a greater investment. Director Beiler talked about the new positions they want to add, which you can see in that line, that is tied to the bonding in some cases and tied to their normal operations in others. Very little federal funds. Lottery funds in this agency are all discretionary lottery funds, and they are all for debt service. Again, you see a small slice of lottery fund. Those are from bonds that were issued in 2009, I think, most of them. You're seeing a big increase in 15-17. That's tied to the new lottery bonds, but it's also tied to the debt service associated with the 13-15 lottery bonds, which, and the reason it shows this kind of big jump is because there was no debt service in 13-15 for those lottery bonds. So it's new. So you're seeing new for the 15-17 bonds, and you're seeing new for the 13-15. So that's it for that.
Question?
Yes, Senator Hensel.
Ms. Conley, when you have the issue or the authority to issue the bonds, like in the previous two biennium, is it that there wasn't a need for the bonds as far as what was projected to be paid for with them, or is it that you couldn't sell them and therefore we didn't? Or I don't understand why we had the what caused it not to be
issued.
Yeah.
Well, Co-Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, I think it's tied to the 2009, the decision by the legislature that if we're going to let these GO bonds go out, because the GO bonds, remember, are the state sells the bonds, but it has to be paid back by the borrower. The state is, as Senator Devlin noted, ultimately responsible, but the plan is that it will all be paid for by the borrower. So the department is required to have this borrower. So I think when the legislature decided to give them the authority, there was a thought. They believe that there was a borrower out there, or a number of borrowers out there, who would take advantage of these loan funds. But in the end, it wasn't simply, you know, those were difficult times economically for this country and this state. Even though the loan funds were, you know, competitive, maybe they weren't competitive enough. And so you just didn't have those borrowers coming in to ask for the loans. And if you don't, so we're not going to put the bonds out there. Did you want to add anything?
Okay. So follow-up? So if you have, in the process, do you sell the bonds, have the money available for the borrowers to come through the program to access those? And if you don't have the borrowers, then it rolls back over. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Well, in the GEO bonds, it's kind of in the GEO bonds, for lottery bonds, we go out and sell them, yeah. and the money comes in. For the GEO bonds, they never sell them unless they have a borrower signed on the line.
So they have the borrower first, then they do the process.
Right, okay. yeah. So, okay. And I assume that's some of the safeguards put in place by the legislature.
Sure. So. I appreciate it. I'm learning, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Senator Hansel, me too. I'm showing you the agency's budget here by expenditure category, and it's just another graphic way to point out that, you know, we're talking about personal services and supplies and services, and that's what we tend to think of as the agency's really their operations. Special payments are those loan and grant payments that the governor's budget is proposing, and then finally debt service is both lottery fund and other fund debt service in there. Really, I think it's really only about 40% of this department's budget is really their operations, and the rest is special payments or debt service. This is expenditures by program. I've just broken it down by the various divisions within the agency. The Water Development Loan Program at the bottom, that's those GEO bonds. Administrative services is a little misleading. It looks like this huge chunk of the department, but as Director Beiler mentioned to you on Monday, this is where the water supply fund is located. So when we look at administrative services, this contains $4.4 million of debt service. That's where the lottery bond debt service is. It has $29.4 million in special payments going out the door. So that's lottery bonds proceeds from both 13-15 and 15-17. And so really I'm figuring about $5.3 million in operations is your personal services and supplies and services out of that blue square. And even that includes about $500,000 in cost of issuance for those bonds. So again, I just didn't want to leave you with the impression that they have a huge amount of money devoted to administrative services, as we normally think of administrative services. That's a big chunk of bonding there. This is their revenue history, and it echoes, it reflects the expenditure history to a great extent. Here in revenue, I'm able to pull out the other funds non-limited from other funds limited, but in this department, it doesn't make that much difference because they don't tend to deal with a lot of non-limited, although that is a way that we sometimes do show those big loan programs. Again, I just focus on two issues. That blue bar at the bottom is really, that's the general fund. You can see the increase in investment in general fund. That's primarily in personal services and the supplies that support the department's efforts. And then the gray bar is the other funds. And again, that's your bonding as well as, but it's primarily bonding is really what it is. And the debt service is the lottery funds, in this slide it's lottery funds. And again, that's your debt service there. It's not operations at all. I did want to mention that the department has a bill out proposing a task force be established to study options for diversifying the department's revenues. And I know that seems kind of odd when you say, well, there's lots of revenue there. But really, again, It's because their operations revenue is their general fund. Investments, I'm not going to go into that. Director Beiler gave you a lot of detail into the investments that the governor's budget is making. Budget challenges, I just wanted to note that I think water resources is really part of this broader conversation that the Natural Resource Program really needs to engage in about diversifying and stabilizing revenue resources over the long haul. There were no technical adjustments, I don't think, to alert you to, so otherwise I am done unless there are questions.
Are there any questions? Okay, with that, thank you both very much. We'll see you all tomorrow for the public testimony, so we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting.